This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner! Scores!
Now, Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
I'm Mike Kelly. Welcome into hour number two. We're going to talk about hoops, baseball, and soccer this hour on Sports on a Sunday. James O'Sullivan still standing by as our producer and board operator this morning. Jim Conlon's the soccer coach at Wash U. He'll join us coming up about 11:45. The Bears, a 5-0 winner over Westminster in the first round of the NCAA Division III tournament last night. They're now 18-0, so we'll talk about his really, really good team coming up about 11:45. John Mozeliak joins me at 11:30. We'll visit with St. Louis U head coach Travis Ford at about 11:20. And joining us now on the phone is the longtime commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference, a conference that enjoyed terrific success last year, sending a team Loyola to the Final Four. We say good morning to Doug Elgin. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Always good to be with you.
Yeah, always. I'm well. Always great to talk to you. Last year was a banner year for the Valley, wasn't it?
It was, and I think it was unexpected. And the best thing about Loyola's run, other than to see the joy of that community and that city, was the fact that it was unexpected. And again, following on the heels of the departure of Wichita State, it really sent the message that we ain't done yet. So with that, that's what makes college basketball special when you think about it, that kind of epic run played on the neutral floor that the NCAA tournament provides, really puts the spotlight on the competition and on the student athletes.
Yeah. And the other compelling story, and it's going to be something that's going to be celebrated in St. Louis as part of the Musial Awards coming up on November the 17th, is Sister Jean, the team chaplain at Loyola, who became really kind of a cult figure throughout the course of the NCAA tournament.
And she did. And, you know, a lot of people think that she's been handicapped in recent years. She fell a couple of years ago. She's been in a wheelchair probably for maybe a year and a half. She's a very vivacious, energetic, intelligent woman who still understands basketball and often will take Porter Moser aside before the game and say, "Porter, you need to work on the zone press with this team. They're going to tear you up." She'll give him advice, and it's really exciting to see that community rally around her. And she'll be 100 years old next August.
Yeah, 99, and again, going to be in town to be celebrated as the St. Louis Sports Commission and Maryville University does a terrific job with the Musial Awards coming up on November the 17th. I was so excited not watching the Missouri game at Iowa State on Friday night as that game was unfolding, but looking at the scores and seeing that the Salukis of SIU had the lead at Kentucky.
They did, and, you know, they have everyone back this year. This should be Barry Hinson's year. He's done two terms here, one of course at Missouri State and now at Southern Illinois. He deserves to have his team in the NCAA tournament and have that opportunity. And I think this might be the year for him, looking ahead to the expectations in our league. He's picked, I think, third in our league this year, behind Loyola and Illinois State. And you look at the local talent that he has. He has Armin Fletcher from Edwardsville High School, Aaron Cook, a junior from Westminster Christian, a team that really could gel. And I would not be at all shocked to see Southern Illinois win the regular season in the Missouri Valley.
Hey, Doug, let's talk about some of the players. You mentioned a couple from SIU, but who are some of the other players that will headline, the All-Valley first team when that's announced at the end of the season, going into the season? Give us some of the guys that fans should keep an eye on.
Well, of course, the headliner this year is a 6'1 redshirt senior at Loyola who won the Larry Bird Trophy, our most outstanding player award. Clayton Custer. He's really one of the nation's top players. He led that NCAA run for Loyola. Others on Loyola, Marcus Towns is a senior guard. He made the winning shot against Nevada to send them to the Elite Eight game against Kansas State. And one of the most incredible freshmen I've seen in college basketball, I've been in the game now for 40 years as an administrator, is Cameron Crudwig. Freshman, left-handed kid, 6'9 center, had 17 points in the Michigan game. He's really going to be a guy to watch nationally, and people say that he's one of the best passing big men in college basketball in recent years. A name familiar to St. Louis fans, Malik Yarborough, is a senior at Illinois State. He and Phil Fain and Keyshawn Evans form a trio of players there. Illinois State is, I think, on paper, certainly a team that you could expect to win the Missouri Valley Tournament this year. And there are numerous other players on the rosters. Jordan Barnes is from CBC High School. He is a star player at Indiana State, and that's what's really made our tournament in St. Louis great, is the quality of basketball, the high level of play that student athletes bring to St. Louis every year.
Yeah, it certainly does. Are you concerned about how difficult it's becoming for teams in the Valley to schedule games, particularly against Power Five teams? And I just think back to last year. I mean, prior to the season, the Illinois State coach actually tweeted out about trying to get a game with a Division I opponent. Ross Bjork from Ole Miss responded. Yeah. Illinois State goes down and beats the Rebels on their home court. It is becoming more and more difficult, is it not, for your teams to get quality games?
Much more difficult, and it's wrong. I think it's wrong. It's financially based. Schools do not want to play road games when they're packing 15,000 people into their home arena. And that's tilted the whole landscape, the whole culture in Division I basketball toward the Power Five programs. And let's face it, Big East, American Athletic, and others are there with them. But, you know, it really puts a pall over college basketball to have tilted to one side. It's troubling, and there is a bias in the system, I think, naturally. Brand bias and selection of teams for the NCAA tournament. In each of the last 6 years, only 3 at-large bids out of 36 at-large bids awarded each year have gone to teams outside the top 7 conferences. And that, to me, is the most troubling the factor in college basketball today. It's becoming so difficult without the access to play in better teams and higher-rated conference. It's getting so difficult for teams to capture at-large access to the NCAA tournament.
You made this statement earlier in this conversation, talking with Doug Elgin, who's the longtime commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference, that we had to prove that we were still alive after Wichita State departed. Mm-hmm. So from purely a fiscal standpoint, and in terms of the long-term viability of the league, how important was it for a team like Loyola to go to the Final Four?
Well, very important in a relative sense. Something like 65% of the Missouri Valley Conference's revenues come from participation in the men's basketball tournament. However, just to put it in context, the Missouri Valley will distribute about $7 million total to all 10 teams, not to each team, to all 10 teams. The Power Five conferences, the Big Ten, I think, led the way, distributing $57 million to each team. Mm-hmm. So that really does frame how difficult it is for basketball-centric leagues like the Atlantic 10, the Missouri Valley, the West Coast Conference, to really fairly compete with the high majors. Now, a lot of that is directed to football. A lot of the revenues comes from and is directed to football. But it really is remarkable when you think about the success of the Atlantic 10, the Missouri Valley, the West Coast Conference down through the years, how well they have been able to compete against the higher resource programs.
Finally, of course, the Valley Tournament has called St. Louis home for a number of years, but really you're kind of in a new home coming up this March because of the work that the St. Louis Blues have done at the Enterprise Center. Just a thought on just that facility and just how remarkable the change has been and how excited you might be about having your tournament there coming up later this year, or later in March, I should say.
I can't say enough about the incredible renovations to the Enterprise Center that await our NBC fans. They're going to be stunned when they come into the building. And what the St. Louis Blues leadership has done to lead our community and making these necessary investments will pay dividends for many years to come. For example, the NCAA tournament's first and second rounds in March of 2020 that was awarded about a year ago is a prime example. There is no way that we would have gotten future NCAA basketball tournaments in that facility had it not been updated. And the financial impact of having an event like that, the concerts, the events that come to that facility, it becomes, it's a financial engine for downtown St. Louis, the hospitality industry, and the region. So I just can't say enough about what the leadership of the Blues has done for this community and certainly for our league. We thank them.
Hey, always great to talk to you, my friend. Have a terrific season.
Thanks, Mike. Really appreciate it.
All right, take care. That's Doug Elgin. He's the commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference. I'm Mike Kelly. Billiken's head coach Travis Ford is next on Sports on a Sunday on my favorite news radio, 1120 KMOX.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
John Mozeliak joins me coming up in our next segment. Don't forget that we've got Blues hockey coming your way at 1:30 this afternoon. Blues taking on the Minnesota Wild at the corner of 14th and Clark. The game will face off at about 2. The Billikens of St. Louis U now 2-0 on the young season as they pick up a win 62-58 over Troy last night at Chaffetz. Final score 62-58. Travis Ford's the head coach at St. Louis U, and he joins us this morning on Sports on a Sunday. Well, what'd you think?
Well, it's always, you know, good to win and learn, a lot better than losing and learning. but still have a long way to go as a basketball team. We're doing some good things. There are some things I do like, but there's a lot of things that we've got to correct and get better at, which is not unusual this time of year, early in the year with a lot of new players. So it's totally not unexpected. But we know we have to play a lot better than we have been the last couple of games.
What did you like?
Well, I thought I liked that we got down and came back. It's the first time we've had to play from behind. We hadn't had to play from behind very much this year, and in two exhibition games and then one other regular season game. We were down in the second half. Got down as much as 10 points in the 10, 11, 12 points in the first half, got down 8-9 points, cut it to 6 at halftime, got down again, I think 8-9 points in the second half, and then fought back. And so that's always good to see. We started getting in some rhythm second half against their man-to-man defense, which we had struggled. Then they went zone. I thought we really attacked their zone really well, and probably was the difference in the game. Made four straight threes, scored a couple times inside. But like how we finished the game, didn't like the first probably 30 minutes of the game, but liked how we finished the game.
Yeah, you had four different players hit threes down the stretch as you come back from the eight-point deficit. I'm just looking at the numbers with your backcourt, particularly minutes played. Goodwin 34, Isabel 36, Best 35. Is that the way it has to be?
Right now, just because we've been into some tough games here, this last game, because all the, Deion Wiley's the only guard sub that has any experience. The rest of them are freshmen, so they got to learn. It's a process. While you're trying to win games early, sometimes you've got to just stick with the experienced guys who've been through it a little bit. But we have to bring along Fred Thatch and Demarius Jacobs. Those are two guys that we think, need to be ready to go and play much more significant minutes by league play time we get to the A-10. But right now it's tough because we're, in this, especially last night when we're just trying to figure out how to win a game.
So almost half of your shots came from the three-point line. Is that what you would like to be? Would you like to see it go more inside out?
That's exactly what's happening. We are throwing it in and we're throwing it out for threes. Probably half or more of our threes are coming from inside to out. We fed the post. We keep a stat. We fed the post almost 28 times last night. That is an emphasis. There's no question. We tell our guys all the time, our big guys get as many touches as there's anybody in America. As we all know in basketball, it's a whole lot easier sometimes to stop a big guy than it is a guard because you can double down,
exactly.
You can help, and there's a lot, and that's what teams are doing to us. So when we start making threes consistently, it will allow the inside game to open up a little bit. What I was really pleased with last night, I thought Cartier Gordon gave us some big buckets down the stretch in the post, some true against their zone. I thought he really made an impact in the last 3 to 4 minutes of the game that really helped us win. And I kind of went with a four-guard lineup with Cartier at the five. You know, normally I would probably maybe finish the game with Hassan French, who's got a little more experience, or maybe DJ Foreman. But, you know, Cartier was playing so well and doing the things we were asking and playing with a physical presence that we stuck with him, and he delivered.
Is it your sense the game's being called tighter early this season than it's been called in years past?
There's no question. That's a great point. No question. I don't like it. It is what it is. I don't agree. You know, I think it's called tighter, but in that terms, when you're calling as many tic-tac fouls and light fouls, it becomes more inconsistent because you could call them every single play. Yeah. I mean, it becomes a very inconsistent whistle when they're trying to call certain fouls light, you know, that really aren't affecting the game. We got a call on us, first half, late 4 or 5 minutes ago in the first half, you know, near the half court line, the guy just kind of, you know, hit the guy on the wrist, but nothing happened. No, I mean, nothing happened at all. And I'm like, you know, at some point you've got to just have a feel for the game. But it's very much, they do this they've done this the last 2 or 3 years, and then it ends up lightening up, you know, later. But I just don't think it's good for the game. I think it causes too many inconsistencies. Call the fouls that matter, and let's move on, let's play.
And the fans don't come to watch the officials blow the whistle. You get called for 22 fouls last night. I was sitting in Ames, Iowa on Friday watching Missouri get called for 26. Now, the difference, you turned it over 11 times. They turned it over 25. But that 51 combination is a bad deal.
We turned it over 24 the game before, so we can match them. We're going, so maybe they'll just do it 11 next time.
Yeah. You know,
I told the refs what you just said last night. I said, this is crazy. I mean, the you know, we're trying to play the game. The fans come to watch the game, and we're calling these fouls that do not matter. I understand calling fouls that affect the game. They're really big on this illegal screening right now. Really big on it. All right, I agree that it does affect it. All right, if it's affecting the play and causing a disadvantage for the defense, let's call it every time. But making calls right now just for the sake of saying, hey, we're trying to clean this up, it's not good for the – I've never been doing this for so long as a player, my whole life, and as a coach. I've never seen so many changes in calls and referee. I mean, call the game the way it's supposed to be called, and let's move on.
Jordan Goodwin last night, 15 points, 9 rebounds for your team.
Yeah, that's what we need from him. I mean, he can affect the game probably more than any player on our team as far as all the different things he can do. And when he's playing to his strength of just, you know, energy, rebounding, cutting hard, running the court, good things happen for our team and good things happen for Jordan. He made a couple threes last night, which was great to see that go in. But, you know, look at the rebounds he's put together back-to-back games. I think he had 11 or so the game before that. But that's what he needs to do to be a great player, an effective player, and our team needs that from him.
What do you know about North Alabama, who comes to town on Tuesday?
You know, I don't know a whole lot right now. I'm actually in the office. I'm still probably on my fourth watch of our game last night. I haven't even started on them yet. I'll be starting on them probably in about 2 hours because we're practicing at 3:00, and then we'll cover last night's game. We never take an opportunity to learn. We'll cover that extensively, and then we'll dive into North Florida or North Alabama a little bit later in practice. We only have 2 days right here to prepare, no days off in between. So we've got to really watch it. As you mentioned earlier, I played a lot of guys, a lot of minutes last night. So today's going to be very much a mental day as far as learning and preparing.
Hey, Trav, thanks. I appreciate it.
Oh, always. I appreciate you having me.
All right, buddy. Take care. That's Travis Ford, head coach at St. Louis U. I'm Mike Kelly. 28 minutes after 11, John Mozeliak, the Cardinals president of baseball operations, up next on KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
27 minutes before 12 o'clock. Blues hockey coverage begins at 1:30. Chris Rabie will have the pregame show, Sports Open Line, before that at 1 o'clock. And that'll be followed by the face-off between the Blues and the Wild coming up at 2 o'clock at the Enterprise Center in downtown St. Louis. John Mozeliak, the president of the baseball operations for the Cardinals, joins us here on Sports on a Sunday. Hi, Mo. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning.
Who's this ageless guy named Molina with a 3-run homer and also picked off a runner at first base for the Major League All-Stars in Tokyo?
Yeah, this is sort of ironic, right? I mean, this guy that you know, you're always like trying to figure out a way to give him rest, and then he decides he's right after the season ends, he goes and manages the Puerto Rico 23 and under team in Colombia, and then from there he jet sets over to Japan and is going to play for a couple weeks. So it's really quite incredible. And I was talking to some people with Major League Baseball, and they were actually so grateful Yachty was willing to play and be a part of it, because just brings a lot of credibility to this tour.
Yeah, without question. We all appreciate him and obviously have watched his body of work unfold during his career with the organization. Yet it seems like, I don't know, some circles still wonder if this guy's a Hall of Fame player, if the numbers deserve it. I can't see where the question is. So make the case for Yachty from your point of view.
I would imagine you're asking me to make the case that he's a Hall of Famer.
Without question.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a layup. I'm not exactly sure why people take the argument he won't be. It just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, you look at his impact and what he has meant to this organization, he is by every right a Hall of Famer. And I think performance unto itself is something that's so unique when you look at the amount he plays and how he actually changes a game. And, you know, there's no doubt that teams have to strategize on how they think about running. And I think it's really one of those types of players that actually makes a huge impact or affects a game on a day-to-day basis. And I also think from an offensive standpoint, it's a little bit unfair to sort of look at his first few years at the big leagues and simply say, well, he wasn't very productive offensively. And I get it. Numbers don't lie. But you have to realize he got to the big leagues very quick, and he was always one of those players at the minor league level that he was always playing up a level because he was so good defensively. And I don't think we ever gave him an opportunity to really, you know, learn the nuances of hitting at the minor league level, and he had to do that at the major league level. And not too dissimilar to somebody like Ozzie Smith, mm-hmm. who, as he aged, became a better hitter.
You were at the general manager meetings, as folks know, in Carlsbad this past week. From your perspective, give me some of the highlights that came out of it, particularly as it involves the industry.
Well, I think from an industry standpoint, it's always a good opportunity to have 30 individuals weigh in on really where they feel the game's going and what they think we could do to improve it. And so there are a lot of different topics that were thrown out there. And I think, as you know, and for the listeners that don't, so the GM meetings happen this week, and then the owners have a meeting beginning this week in Atlanta. And those really sort of dovetail one another. So they take some of the things that happened at the GM meetings and then mm-hmm. we'll put it on the floor for the ownership group to talk through. So rather than get into sort of some of the things that we touched on there, because a lot of that may never actually make it back off the floor, I think the way to think about it is the GM meetings are really about three things. One is industry issues, rule changes, and those types of things. Then there's the trade market, where you have the opportunity to sit down face-to-face with 29 other teams, or at least try to find teams that you may or may not match up with, which begins that sort of first runway, if you will, towards the winter meetings. And then, of course, you have the opportunity to meet with agents and get a sense of what that free agent market is shaping up or looking like. And so ultimately, when you're there for the 3 days, you're really trying to be able to check the boxes of all three of those categories. And, you know, I certainly felt like we were able to do that we left there with a pretty good idea of what this is going to sort of look like as things go forward. But still some work to be done, but feel pretty good about our time spent.
All right, so what can you tell us in terms of what it may look like in terms of free agency and the market right now?
Well, I think from a free agent standpoint, it's really our responsibility is to do our due diligence to get a sense of what we think the market is going to look like. As you know, your teams are prohibited to speak on specific players.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's one of those situations where, unfortunately, it's just not a lot to talk about. And it's not a lot of insight I can give other than, you know, it's our responsibility to sort of leave these types of meetings with more of an understanding than we came in with.
All right, so fans are always wondering, when are we going to see something happen? When's it going to take place? Give me an idea. We saw a lot of movement later, I think, as the winter progressed this past year. What do you think the calendar will look like?
It's certainly, like, you know, this is one man's opinion, and it's...
Well, that's why I'm asking you.
my point is, there's a lot more than just what I think, and you clearly, when you think about the trade market or the free agent market, it usually it's a crescendo somewhere around winter meetings. And, you know, is there times where you see movement before winter meetings? Sure. And could you see some this year? Yes. But I think, you know, the bulk or the, you know, the heavy lifting will probably come the week of winter meetings.
I appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That's John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations of the Cardinals. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday, heard each week here on KMOX. It's 11:39 in St. Louis. Wash U's got a pretty good soccer team, folks. 18-0 on the season. They win round one of the NCAA Division III tournament. We'll visit with their head coach, Jim Conlon, coming up on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln & Ford Sports on a Sunday morning. On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
By the way, in women's soccer, the Billikens of St. Louis U saw their season come to an end Friday night as they lose in double overtime against Kansas in Lawrence. Final score was 2-1 as they were beaten in the 104th minute of the match. Billikens school record 14-game winning streak comes to an end, so they finished the season 18-4-1, but a school record 18 victories for the women's soccer team at St. Louis U. So congratulations to them on a terrific season. Talking about a terrific season, and it's still underway. In fact, next match is tonight against Illinois Wesleyan at 6 p.m., second round of the NCAA tournament, the Division III tournament. The Bears of Wash U, they win 5-0 against Westminster in the first round Saturday evening, now 18-0. Jim Conlon is their head coach. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, thanks for joining us. Just give me a bit of a recap, if you will, of the match against Westminster.
We got off to a fast start, and Westminster came up with a good organized game plan, and we were able to crack the net middle of the second half, and once that happened, I think our women got a little bit of confidence and found the net some more after combining in the midfield, and that led to some really good offensive chances.
You've been the head coach at Wash U since 2008. You won the national championship in 2016. This team now with a school record, 18-game winning streak. How does this team compare to the 16 team?
I think they've got similar grit. The 2016 team definitely had some grit and some great talent. I think this team has the experience. All of our seniors and juniors were on that team. Many of them played a large part in it. So for them to offer their experience to some of the younger players that we've been playing, I think we've got a really nice mixture of talented young players and talented and experienced older players. So hopefully they'll just continue to go one game at a time, and we need to worry about Illinois Wesleyan because you can't repeat a national championship unless you get to the national championship. So, you know, making sure that we just stay focused on Illinois Wesleyan today and taking care of business on that one.
I'm going to ask you for a preview in just a second, but obviously defensively you've been very, very good this season, only allowing 4 goals.
The defense has been fantastic. Our sophomore goalkeeper, Emma Greenfield, is rock solid for us back there. And then the back line has been minimizing a lot of chances to her, but she makes the saves she needs, and the defense is minimizing those opportunities, so shutouts are a source of pride for us. If we can shut a team out, we know we're doing things well on both sides of the ball. And so we're definitely trying to stay strong in our defensive efforts.
So you've got Illinois Wesleyan coming up tonight at home at 6 p.m. Just a snapshot on Wesleyan.
The Snapshot and Wesleyan's a little unknown, to be honest. They brought in a brand new head coach. They've been a really good program for the last decade or so, but their new coach is putting their own flavor on it. It seems to be kind of a high-flying, a lot of open space, a lot of attacking opportunities for them. So with our defense and their offensive style, it should bode to be a good one, but there's a little bit of an unknown as to what they're going to come with the coach being in his first season.
Yeah, 6 p.m. coming up tonight. You highlighted your goaltender. Who else individually has stood out for your team?
Well, I mean, I think it starts with our leading scorer, Taylor Cohen, a junior for us, and she does a lot of goal scoring. You've also got Darcy Cunningham and Maggie Crist, who really kind of fill the middle for many periods of the season. Darcy's our creative player, and Maggie just got named UAA Athlete of the Year for women's soccer. So making sure that she does her role in the middle of the park to not only start our defense, but continue our offense moving the ball around.
Hey, Jim, finally, before we let you go, earlier on this program, we had a conversation that Dan McLaughlin, of course, the Cardinals broadcaster for Fox Sports Midwest and also does stuff for his own website, scoopswithdannymac.com, spoke with Jim Cavanaugh, who's the CEO of course, Worldwide Technologies, and he and the Taylor family are trying to bring the MLS to St. Louis. For your program and for soccer in St. Louis, how important would it be to see that mission accomplished, to see the MLS in the city of St. Louis?
I think the MLS absolutely deserves to be in St. Louis, and I think it would be a huge boost regionally as well as nationally. Let some of that national exposure, especially with a roster like ours who draws from, I think, 15 states right now, we need the MLS in St. Louis. And the MLS needs St. Louis to have an MLS team. So I think it would be huge. I'm super grateful for Mr. Cavanaugh and the team that's working to make all this happen, but having the MLS in St. Louis is absolutely the right call. We have the right market. We have the right enthusiasm, and it will just bring an enthusiasm to this region that we deserve.
Jim Conlon knows. He's the head coach at Washington University since 2008, won a national championship in 2016 and trying to make it 19 consecutive wins. Coming up tonight is the Bears take on Illinois Wesleyan. Coach, thanks for your time. Congratulations on the season to date, and go get it done.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. That is Jim Conlon, the head coach of the women's soccer team at Washington University. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Chris Raby will be in with a Sports Open line prior to our coverage of Blues hockey at 1:30. Blues face off against the Wild. Coming up at 2 at Enterprise Center. How are you, Mr. Raby?
Good. What's going on, man?
Well, just wanted to check in. It's been a while since we've had a chance to chat. Your thoughts on what you've seen? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and since then, I think
some signs of encouragement and some positivity around the hockey team.
Yeah, exactly. And that was going to be my point. Just what have you seen from this team that gives you optimism moving forward?
You know, I think just kind of the cliche, like, that it takes some time, especially when you have new pieces and when you have new pieces playing as big of roles as the Blues have. Excuse me. And certainly, you know, when you bring in Ryan O'Reilly, and where would they be through this early part of the season without him? But, you know, you add him to the mix in a lot of different ways. You get a couple of guys back from injury. You get some pieces that are playing different roles. You get some new guys that are in the NHL for the first time. So I think we're starting to see them play a more complete game, more of the style of game that we expected. I think Chad Johnson has helped over the last couple of games, but I think the defense is starting to play better. And certainly I think Friday night, it all kind of culminated with probably their best all-around effort of the year so far.
And of course, the last couple of games, Pat Maroon's not been in the lineup. I thought Darren Pang earlier today on this program framed it perfectly in terms of this being just a really good reset for Pat Maroon, to kind of, regroup and then get ready to dive back in and helping this team.
Yeah, I think so. And, when you put pressure on yourself and, players, Joey Vitale will say, you start gripping the stick a little tight, and especially you're doing it in St. Louis in your hometown after the excitement of the offseason, deciding to come here, deciding just to sign the one-year deal. I can imagine that there are some other factors that go into him maybe being a little hard on himself or putting a little pressure on himself. So be able to step back and
you know, say it's okay, take a deep breath and have that kind of reset, I think will be great for him. And, you know, the thing is, even during his struggles, quote unquote, he was still being productive on the power play. So I think that that will be another piece that once you get him back and you get him playing at a level that, you know, he can play and has proven he can play in this league, that'll certainly be another asset for this team.
How about Robert Thomas and his play of late?
Oh, yeah, it's been great. I think that another guy who got a little bit of resolution to his situation, he knows he's going to be up here and, you know, plays a little bit of swagger with that. He knows that he doesn't need to kind of look over his shoulder, doesn't need to wonder if he's going to be headed back to juniors after getting the taste of the NHL. So Robert Thomas, and especially Robert Thomas with Robbie Fabbri, I think sometimes we take for granted a little bit how young Robbie Fabbri is because of the, you know, terrible injuries that he's undergone. But, you know, for him and Thomas together to play, I know that, you know, Jordan Kyrou back down now, but you're getting a glimpse of what this team is going to be and a lot of the skill that they have within the organization that they've done such a great job of building over recent years.
Yeah, you mentioned Robbie Fabbri, and in this business, and I'm talking about, you know, if you're a broadcaster following a team or just following a sport, you root for guys, particularly guys that deal with adversity throughout the course of their life. And obviously in his young career, Robbie Fabbri has had to deal with some adversity from an injury standpoint. To see him score was really cool, wasn't it?
It was. And, you know, not just score, but play the game like he never missed a beat, from his speed to his physicality to his instincts. I mean, I can't imagine undergoing not just one, but two of those injuries back to back. And then what must be going through your mind when you try to come back again. And I have seen no hesitation, no reservation from him. I think it was smart the way they treated the non-knee related injury at the end of the preseason to the start of the regular season. And he looks like he hasn't skipped a beat. So, you know, to get that guy back and to add him to the mix of what you already have offensively has been huge. This is a team that I think is going to score goals in volume and ways that we haven't seen over the past few seasons. And certainly we didn't see last year under Mike Yeo when, you know, they struggled and struggled down the stretch on the power play. So the offense is a real asset. If they shore things up defensively and get the kind of goaltending I know that they think they're going to get from Jake Allen and certainly the backup Chad Johnson, then, you know, this thing could get turned around in a hurry and continue to make some hay in the Central.
Yeah, Johnson's been really good, hasn't he?
He has. And, you know, that's what you need and hope for from a backup. And, again, it gives you an opportunity to give Jake a little bit of time. And certainly, you know, I think Jake would tell you that there are some saves that he's got to make and you know, he would hope to be a little bit better at this point of the season, but he certainly wasn't getting any help defensively. I think that, you know, for him to get that little bit of a reset as well, and you look at any team around the NHL and any successful team around the NHL, they've got to have two good goaltenders. They've got to have two really good goaltenders and essentially two starting caliber goaltenders. Look what happened in Nashville with Nashville and Pekka Rinne last year when he went through some troubles, and now look where he is now. I mean, it happens. And to be able to rely on a second, I shouldn't even say backup, rely on a second goaltender the way the Blues have been fortunate to do so over the last few years and have done over the last couple of games to Chad Johnson is a big part for the reason of their success.
Hey, finally, just painted with a broad brush, you know, a little over a month into the season or however long it's been, just a thought on the league overall. What give me a headline or two that's captured your attention.
Excitement, young skill, and scoring. I think that scoring obviously is way up. I think that just flipping around and watching games or watching highlights at night, it's incredible, you know, rattling off Robbie Fabbri and Robert Thomas, you know, the amount of exciting young players around the league, certainly a handful of them from St. Louis. I think if you're a hockey fan, this is just an incredible time for the game right now, for the league, and on a night-to-night basis for what we're seeing. So, you know, today should be another good one against Minnesota, and then you've got some real tough tests over the next couple of weeks. Vegas, San Jose, Nashville, Winnipeg. I mean, the hits keep coming because everyone is good and every team has a lot of firepower.
Chris, thank you. You'll be here with the Sports Open Line coming up at 1 o'clock, followed by the pregame show at 1:30. That does it for Sports on a Sunday on my favorite, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.